Well, good morning, TNC family, from my home to wherever you are. These are still crazy times. In some ways, I think maybe even crazier than last week. Scientists saying one thing while politicians say another. Doctors describing one situation, protesters describing another. Governors disagreeing with mayors. Parks stay closed while bowling alleys open. And meanwhile, people are still getting the virus. Deaths are still increasing. Families are wrecked with worry and grief. Finances are getting even tighter. And fatigue and frustration is mounting. And for understandable reasons, I don't want every single news story to be some angle on the virus. I don't want to have to grieve and hear stories about families losing loved ones. I don't want every small business in the entire world to wonder if they will survive. I don't want to worry. And I don't want the uncertainty. I do want to be able to watch baseball and play pickup basketball. I do want to be able to sit around a table with my friends and family. I do want to not have to worry about social distancing. But at the same time, I get that it's not all about me. Because I also want hospital workers to be able to go home and sleep without worrying that they are contaminating their families. And I want the virus to be contained and the fear to fade and the devastating loss to subside. You know what else I want? I want to get back to church family, face-to-face gatherings, church services and game nights and parties and hugs, and all the simple things that we took for granted, that we were wrong to take for granted. And I hope and pray that when we get them back, we will cherish them more than we ever have. But while we are in the middle of all of this, I will say that I am grateful that we are continuing to love, serve, pray, and connect with one another. And I'm also grateful that we're reading together daily through the fifth book of the New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles, because journeying with them and facing what they are facing is giving us perspective and wisdom and confidence as we face what we are facing in this era. And today I want to consider with you not a single text from the book of Acts, but instead the person behind the bulk of the text, the Apostle Paul. Because Paul is the central figure in the book of Acts, both before he becomes a Jesus follower and after his Damascus Road conversion. And when you read Acts, this is what you get. Everywhere Paul goes, he is equally likely to simultaneously cause a riot in one part of the city while brokering a reconciliation in another. And Paul still today is seen as the most significant person in the history of the early church. No person in the entire first century world was more responsible for merging the Jewish worldview together with the Christian worldview and starting churches across the entire Roman Empire, filled with Jews and non-Jews, and defending the gospel against poor theology and misguided practical living. And 13 letters in the New Testament are attributed to Paul. And most of the theology of the early church and their beliefs about Jesus came from Paul. And Paul knows more than he would prefer to know. about facing and living in eras of confusion, frustration, fear, and anxiety. In fact, at one point, he actually lists some of the adversity he's faced in a letter written to the church at Corinth around 57 Common Era. Chapter 11, verse 23 says, quote, it's Paul talking, I have worked harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. Verse 24, 5 different times the Jewish leaders gave me 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Once I spent a whole night and a day adrift at sea. Verse 26, I have traveled on many long journeys. I have faced danger from rivers and from robbers. I have faced danger from my own people. I have faced danger in the cities, in the deserts, and on the seas. And I have faced danger from men who claim to be believers, but are not. I have endured many sleepless nights. I have been hungry and thirsty, and have often gone without food. I have shivered in the cold without enough clothing to keep me warm. Verse 28. Then, besides all this, I have the daily burden of my concern for all the churches. Yikes, friends, that's a long list. And by the way, just because he's a Bible guy, don't assume he's like Neo in the Matrix, where bullets aren't real. Or he's like Superman, who's immune to almost every danger. Because his troubles try his soul. For example, in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, Paul's on a journey around northern Greece, and he writes a letter, and he says, look, I do not want you to be ignorant. I am in deep despair of life itself. And later, it seems like Paul's about to have a nervous breakdown, or he's at least dealing with depression. And one time, he begs God, to take away a lifelong affliction. I'm saying Paul struggles. But if you know his story, then you also know that he has learned to tap into a hidden reservoir of strength amid his struggles. He's learned. Didn't come easy, wasn't automatic, but he's learned. And so, in the middle of really tough situations, he's able to draw from this hidden reservoir of strength. One example, Acts chapter 16, verse 22. A mob formed against Paul and Silas, and the city officials ordered them stripped and beaten with rods. They were severely beaten, and then they were thrown into prison. Verse 24, the jailer was ordered to make sure they did not escape. And so he put them into the inner dungeon and clamped their feet in the stocks. Verse 25, around midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening. Suddenly, there was a massive earthquake, and the prison was shaken to its foundations. All the doors immediately flew open, and the chains of every prisoner fell off. Now stop. Because if I was in jail, and an earthquake came, and the jail was opened up, and my chains fell off, I'd assume God sent it for me to escape. But Paul does not attribute the earthquake to an act of God. Verse 27, the jailer woke up to see the prison doors wide open. He assumed the prisoners had escaped, and so he drew his sword to kill himself. Verse 28, but Paul shouted to him, stop! Don't kill yourself! We are all here. In other words, Paul had the chance to escape, but does not. Because his escape would have resulted in the jailers getting punished by death. So he stays, and he's singing with Silas. I actually almost titled this podcast, Singing with Silas. He's singing with Silas. Why? Why? Because he just has this hidden reservoir. A hidden reservoir of strength and energy and hope and purpose that he draws on in this difficult time. And so I want to talk to you today about that hidden reservoir. Because it's a reservoir we have access to as well, if we'll learn to access it. So let me suggest now that there are 4 C's of your hidden reservoir. 4 C's. And the first C is cause. Cause. Specifically, a cause greater than your circumstance. A goal that gives the grunt work some glory. An energy that allows you to endure the inconveniences. A place you are heading, a journey you're on that's so meaningful that it's worth the inevitable pain and yuck that comes with it. Like if your purpose is to experience the thrill of whitewater rafting, then you probably won't mind the circumstance of that smelly orange life jacket. And those ice-cold rapids and those dangerous jagged rocks. Like if your cause is bigger muscles and a healthier heart, you won't mind as much the immediate circumstance of the sweat and the pain of lifting weights or going out for a jog. If your cause is pumpkin carving glory, you don't mind cleaning out the pumpkin guts. Like if you love, as a teacher, seeing a student have a breakthrough, then that vision and cause gives you patience and strength in the middle of their questions and frustrations. And Paul had a purpose that helped him persevere through the inevitable pain that came along the way. And here was Paul's cause. Paul believed, and for good reason, that through Jesus, God had launched his plan to bring heaven and earth together again at last, as it was in the beginning. And Paul believed that this reality was being activated by God's Spirit. And Paul's cause was to share the real-world implications for this reality. For Paul, Jesus' life, death, and resurrection meant what it meant for the real world. And Paul said that to share this joy and this hope and this wisdom was worth whatever obstacles he faced along the way. And when he got weighed down and beaten up and discouraged, he remembered the cause. Now, if you've been listening to these podcasts over the past couple months, you know I've been sharing a few stories from Alex Banayan's book, The Third Door, The Wild Quest to Uncover How the World's Most Successful People Launched Their Careers. One more story, Chapter 7. In Chapter 7, Banayan describes sitting down with Sugar Ray Leonard, the 6-time world champion boxer and worldwide superstar. Sugar Ray Leonard grew up in Palmer Park, Maryland, in poverty. One Christmas, in fact, the only gifts under the tree were apples and oranges that his dad stole from the supermarket stockroom where he worked. And when he was young, Ray was a below-average boxer, shorter, skinnier, and less experienced than the other boys at the local gym. And so he'd go to the gym, but leave literally beaten and bloodied and exhausted. So one day, as he walked with his brothers and sisters to the bus stop, he decided that he was done getting on the bus. So he instead stretched, tightened his shoelaces, and ran after the bus all the way to school. And ran behind the bus all the way home. And he did it the next day, and the next day, and the next day. In the heat, and the rain, and the snow, and some days, he said, were so cold that ice froze on his face. Friends, are you listening? A real human being actually did this. Sugar Ray told Banyan, quote, "I did not have the experience, but I had the discipline and the desire. I had this cause." Now, years later, Leonard would fight Thomas the Hitman Hearns at Caesar's Palace, where the winner would become the undisputed welterweight champion of the world. Hearns, some of you will remember, was not only undefeated, but he also had won almost every fight by knockout because of his famous left jab that would snap his opponent's head back, which would then set up this nasty knockout blow. Bam! The right hook. And this fight, called the showdown, started out like pretty much every other fight for Hearns. Left jab, pop, 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 connecting with Sugar Ray's left eye. Jab, 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 to the point where Ray's face became bloodied and his eyelids became swollen, virtually shut. Round after round after round. And after round 12, Sugar Ray was not only behind on all the scorecards, but he was also sitting slumped on his stool in the corner of the ring, his left eye barely able to open. And while he was sitting there, before the start of the 13th, his trainer gave Ray some encouraging words. Are you ready for him? "You're blowing it! You're blowing it!" Sugar Ray in the book tells Banyan, "I had the heart, but my mind was saying, forget it." So, Banyan is interviewing Ray, and at some point in the interview, Sugar Ray pauses, and he looks right at Banyan and says, "You may have a desire, a wish, a dream, but it's got to be more than that. You have got to want it, the cause, until the point that it hurts more than anything else." Now, I won't tell you what happened in the 13th round. You can watch it on YouTube if you want, but I do want to say that this story makes the point that a cause gives you a hidden reservoir of strength when adversity comes. And I'm not saying that your cause has to be like a world-class athlete, or even that your cause has to be to go around the world and plant churches and start churches everywhere. But here's what I am saying. If you know why you are waking up each morning, if you have a cause for your day, it will give you a hidden reservoir of strength. Like, don't let your cause be, "Oh, I'm going to work to get a paycheck." No. Instead, what about I'm caring for my family. I'm the chief encouragement officer among my colleagues. I'm adding value to the world. I'm spreading love and joy. Or, like if you were going to join ALTA, the tennis league, don't let your cause be, well, I got to find something to do with all my free time. No. Instead, it's my team is going to win the championship and we're going to have a blast doing it. That's my cause. And when I give to a charity, like, say, Charity Water, since that's a cause we all believe in here, it's not I give to assuage my guilt or to get a tax break. It's to literally help end the water crisis in our lifetime. And I'm just saying, friends, that living with a cause will truly be a hidden reservoir of energy and strength for your days. So what's your cause? And if you don't know, then will you think about it and pray about it and talk to wise people and wrestle with it? Because that's the first C of your hidden reservoir. Cause. Number two, the second C of your hidden reservoir is community. See, Paul has Silas and Timothy and Barnabas and a church around the corner praying for him and friends across the Roman Empire willing to support and encourage and shelter him when he visits. And man, I'm just saying, it is so encouraging to not be alone in life, to have friends in your corner and on your sideline and in your dugout and on your bench and blocking for you and setting screens for you and giving you the perfect assist and bunting you over. Henry Cloud, the best-selling author and psychologist recognized as one of the top thinkers in his field, he wrote a book a few years ago called The Power of the Other. The startling effect other people have on you. And he writes about how when he was in school, in college, about how, quote, I wanted to become the best psychologist I could become and learn all of the best treatment protocols, coaching and consulting methodologies, and anything else that would add to my toolbox. And so he writes, I learned all I could about cognitive therapy, gestalt psychology, transactional analysis, organizational behavior, behavioral interventions, group therapy, primal therapy, psychodynamic treatment, inpatient treatment, and on and on. I was on a mission to help people, he says. Then one day in graduate school, I was in class and my professor said, quote, I'm going to tell you now what helps the patients more than anything else. Experience has proven that there is one thing that actually brings about the greatest change and health in your patient, client, or counselee. And the treatment most likely to produce change, growth, and healing in a person, his professor went on, is not a counselor's techniques, styles, intervention strategies, or logic. It's the relationship between the psychologist and the client. And after that, helping your client find the right group of friends to encourage and support them. Cloud writes that he literally almost changed professions because at the time, he was more interested in the techniques and strategies than in the relationships. But now, he writes, after over 30 years of practicing himself, he can attest that his professor was right. How do you surpass your current limits, your current realities? How do you become better? How do you become more, he asks. Answer, make room for the right relationships. When you get the power of the other on your side, you can surpass whatever limit you are currently experiencing or will ever experience in the future. And so, friends, I think your question is, who is your Silas? Who is your Timothy? And are you calling on your church family? Because your hidden reservoir will be the strength of your connections. And I know many of you are sheltering in place right now with a partner or family member, and I would just say lean into them, encourage them as they encourage you. And in addition, I would say, especially to those folks not sheltering in place with an encouraging partner or family member, please don't be stubborn. Learn how to leverage Zoom and WebEx and FaceTime and talk to your neighbors 6 feet apart and stay connected to our church through our webcasts and podcasts and small groups. Because the second C in your hidden reservoir is community. Number three, the third C of your hidden reservoir is creativity. Creativity. Because, you know, I think if I was beaten to an inch of my life and then thrown in jail in the deepest, darkest part of the jail, then handcuffed inside the cell, I think I may not see things from a very strong or optimistic perspective. But read the story, because Paul does. And it's because he has this creative interpretation of his situations. Hey, this is actually the perfect opportunity to share my cause with the jailer. I've shared with some of you before the story of the chicken farmer whose land flooded every spring. The waters would rise on his property, the chicken coops would start flooding, and he'd struggle to get his chickens to higher ground. And some years he couldn't move fast enough, and hundreds of chickens would drown. And one day, after the worst spring he'd ever experienced and losing half his coop to the rising waters, he came into the farmhouse and said to his wife, "I'm so discouraged. I can't afford to buy another place, and I can't sell this one. I don't know what to do." His wife replied, "Invest in ducks." I read recently the story of Cheryl McGinnis. One morning in late summer, her husband Tom went off to work very early in the morning, as he often did. And then a few hours later, she got a voicemail from a friend asking if Tom was home. And then another call. She says she knew that something was up, but she didn't have any idea what it was. But then she learned that a plane had been hijacked. It was the morning of September 11, 2001. And Cheryl's husband, Tom, was a pilot for American Airlines. And American Airlines Flight 11, for which Tom had been the co-pilot, was the first plane that crashed into the World Trade Center. And it was not a simple road in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. But in her book, Beauty Beyond the Ashes, she wrote, "As unfair, unreasonable, and impossible as it seems, the circumstances of 9/11 forced me to examine who I was and to face myself in ways I had never had to before." And then she writes, "In the ashes, I saw that I was stronger." And she goes on to describe in the book how in the middle of her loss, she began to experience a resolve and to see a hope and find a purpose she had never known before. And while she would always grieve the ashes, she said, she had come to see a beauty beyond the ashes. And I think the question for us here is, in the middle of our adversities, will we look beyond for the possibilities? Because I actually really do believe it's possible that amid the struggle, we will also find a hidden reservoir of patience or determination or a skill we didn't know we had or a perspective that we would have never found otherwise. Creativity is the third C of your hidden reservoir. Finally, number four, the fourth C of your hidden reservoir is Christ. It's the power of Christ. You know, when you read about the Apostle Paul, his external situation is so often unsettling, but his internal disposition is so often settled. Externally, he's in prison, but internally, he's free. Externally, he's exhausted, but internally, he's energized. And he says at one point, recorded in Philippians chapter 4, that he has discovered a hidden reservoir of internal contentment, no matter his external situation. In verse 12, he writes, "I have learned the secret to being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want." I've learned. I've learned. That phrase is so encouraging. I've learned. Because it means we can learn too. I've learned the secret. Verse 13. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And now I think the challenge of that verse is to not turn that famous text into a theological shot of caffeine, but instead to let it sink in. What that means for the real world, which is, it means there really is a divine dimension in our universe. And there really is a Holy Spirit of Christ that will never leave us nor forsake us. And that means that his presence and his power and his wisdom really is a hidden reservoir of strength for us all the time, including in this time. And that's my prayer today. These four C's. That in this era, we would know his presence infusing our causes and encouraging our communities and helping us see our situations with creativity. And that that would give us strength to be able to, in the words of the writer of Hebrews, run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith.